The Guardian.
Have you always wanted to write a novel, a history, a short story, your epitaph? Want to know how successful authors do it? It's all in a new Guardian book. I'll tell you more at the end of this podcast.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today in Football Weekly, Premier League. Andre Villas-Boas misses Bale's deliveries because of Mrs. Bale's delivery as Chelsea put Spurs on their heels. Elsewhere, Norwich are glad Grant Holt's still in the club after shock winner against Gunners, and Liverpool get home win but another lengthy striker shortage in prospect once Raheem Sterling starts attending the births of his offspring. There's Champions League previews, Celtic-Barcelona, Arsenal-Schalke, Malaga-Milan and the latest from Spain where Messi, like George Osborne, put in a great performance against Depor, and Italy where Milan are now just their head-to-head record outside the relegation zone. All that plus hosts and more. Right, well, a very special pod, a quite controversial pod awaiting us today. We've got Barry Glendenning in.
Hello.
Have a look at this. Fernando Duarte's in town.
Hey. It's been a long time. How are you guys?
It certainly has. And equally long, so long, in fact, some thought he'd never come back. Barney Rone.
Hello.
Hi, Barney. You slammed the door in both a metaphorical and a literal sense when you left last time.
Yeah, the door was never closed.
Yeah. It's good. Well, great that you're back here on the occasion of a huge weekend in football that you saw how much of, Barney?
Bits and bobs.
Right, then. Because it's been your 10th wedding anniversary, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It was my aluminium anniversary.
Right, nice to see that. Now, Spurs-Chelsea in other news. Barry.
Yaha.
All right, then. Chelsea, it's their best ever start in the Premier League.
Yeah, and I have to say, I really enjoyed watching them play.
Good.
It was just a sublime performance. It was a strange kind of game. Chelsea completely bossed the first half hour. Then Spurs got back into it, bossed the middle half hour, and Chelsea pretty much bossed the final half hour.
Right.
I think Spurs, when they went ahead, as ridiculous as it might sound, going ahead seemed to do for them. And they sat back a bit. And that ball played by Oscar through to Juan Mata for goal number three.
One of them, anyway. Yeah.
Was it? What a pass. I mean, just absolutely beautiful. Just to have the vision to pick it out, first of all, and then the physical coordination to pull it off, it was magnificent.
This Oscar fella, Fernando.
I'm really surprised he adapted so well. I was never in doubt he would be a very good signing, but I would expect him to kind of like take at least half a season, or maybe a season, to actually, you know, fit in. It's a difficult site for a player to arrive. It's a difficult league for a player from Brazil to arrive. I mean, he played in Brazil, let's be honest. The level's not even comparable. And all of a sudden, he's basically rubbing shoulders with these guys. He bosses a Champions League match against Juventus, and I'm gobsmacked by the personality he's shown so far.
All right, well, thumbs up as well for Mata. And Mikel, thumbs down very much for Kyle Walker. Barney?
I'm confused by Chelsea. You know, I'm all set up to find them slightly disagreeable. I mean, this is not a club that particularly asks you to like it. And it never has done, really. I mean, it's a club created to make revenue.
This is new Chelsea, Barney.
Well, exactly. And I mean, everything's still clearly wrong about it. I mean, the structure, the fact that, you know, the
is it? Well, you got Bruce Buck coming out the other day saying about how awful he felt for Anton Ferdinand and his family, that they had to go through all of this. Yeah, really heartfelt words, and kind of calling Terry out on the fact that his apology hadn't been
enough,
more specific.
My problem is that I know who Bruce Buck is and I know who Ron Goulet is. I don't want to know who Ron Goulet is. I don't want PLC structures in football.
Right.
And I don't want clubs owned by billionaires. But
how's football working out for you these days?
At the same time, I really like this Chelsea team. And I really like, I mean, obviously, the Juan Mata is a massive problem. It's like Luke Skywalker's in charge of the Death Star. I mean, he's so likeable. He's so nice, such a wonderful player.
I'm not sure that in terms of charisma, Luke Skywalker's your go-to guy in the kind of Star Wars canon of characters.
Han Solo?
Han Solo, yeah.
But I'm not sure he's a Han Solo. I think he's a very nice, likeable guy.
Oh, right, okay.
And they sound a lot
He's
of
more
people.
Uncle Lars, isn't he? I mean, visually.
Quite possibly. Uncle Lars is in charge of the Death Star.
Yeah, there you go.
The young Uncle Lars.
His
stature is more of sort of C-3PO, isn't he?
Is he?
He's an R2-D2, perhaps.
Yeah, R2-D2, totally.
That would be confusing. Imagine if R2-D2 ran the Death Star. I'll tell you one thing, the Empire would never have been taken out. R2-D2 would have
That's
taken
what I'm saying. They also signed a bunch of people, and you could expect them to basically, you know, struggle to find some identity, and all of a sudden they become this entertaining side. It's really kind of like annoying to actually like Chelsea, because they made everything did everything for people to hate them in the last in the last couple of months, including the Champions League when they decided that, you know, it was their God-given right to win that competition. They won it, brilliant, but still, you couldn't feel like, in the mix zone, for example, in the stadium, everybody was like, God, we're going to have to deal with Chelsea, champions of Europe. And all of a sudden, they're the most entertaining side in England.
Well, right. Chelsea, we hate you for making us like you. That's pretty much the message. Chelsea fans are probably going to love this kind of conversation. Well, and we're going to have to get used to them because they're going to be around a long time. Interesting stat this weekend that they are actually they had the fifth youngest team. You remember how they always used to be the old guard and all that? They've now got the fifth youngest team in this weekend's Premier League lineups. Barry. Okay.
Well, first of all, I was just going to say I've spent 30 years being not knowing which droid in Star Wars was which. I thought...
Really? You thought C-3PO was the small one?
Yeah.
And possibly still do from your One Matter comments earlier.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I meant the small one.
And no way.
I've got them mixed up for 30 years. That's quite something.
All right. That's up there with South Africa is not an island. Spurs, in the meantime, no Gareth Bale, because he was off seeing Firstborn arriving, and no Dembele as well. So is it the case to be too downhearted for Andre Villas-Boas?
Of course not. He's just lost to the champions of Europe.
Right.
Fair enough. Okay. With his best players missing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Dembele has been magnificent for Spurs this season, and it's unfortunate timing on baby Bale's part because, you know, he could have made a huge, huge difference to the result. But no, I thought Spurs played well as well and made a huge contribution to what was a very entertaining game.
Yeah, full credit to both teams. Spurs this Thursday are going to be off in Maribor in the exciting Europa League. They've drawn with Lazio and away at Panathinaikos, and they're third in the group, so they need a result, do Spurs. Chelsea, meanwhile, are in action on Wednesday, I believe it is. They're away to Shakhtar Donetsk, who look good, very good in their last match away to Juventus. Well, Shakhtar have got a great record at home in Europe, Barney. You were probably just about to say this. They've only lost two of their last 18 home games. Chelsea, meanwhile, have won two of their last three away in Europe, and they're on an eight-game Champions League unbeaten run. So looking good, eh?
It should be an interesting game for them as well. I was there in that stadium when England played Ukraine. And one of the biggest rounds of applause of the night was for Roman Abramovich. I don't really know why, but he was incredibly warmly received.
Right.
I think because the stadium was full of Russians.
That could be it. John Terry will also be available again for Chelsea. Yeah. Now, anyway, that's coming up in the middle of the week. Arsenal will also be in Champions League action as they attempt to bounce back from their disastrous trip to East Anglia. Little Norwich, a dangerous thing once again. The interesting thing here, Barry, did you know that Arsenal went to this game by plane?
I didn't.
14 minutes in the air.
14 minutes in the air.
From Luton to Norwich. Seriously? Well, did they win the tickets in the raffle and they needed to cash them in before some? Why? Well, what's the logistics of flying 14 minutes? Seriously.
Have you driven to Norwich?
It's a very long journey.
Mm. What about a train? What about like a proper, proper tour bus where they go lying down, playing cards, etc.?
But have you not heard about the pedestrianisation of Norwich city centre? I mean, I don't know what your opinion is on that, Barry. I'm dead against it.
Right. It's an interesting point, but surely the brevity of the flight should only underline why Arsenal took it. If the flight had taken, say, 2 hours, then we'd be entirely in our right to say, what on earth were they thinking taking this two-hour flight when they could have just driven there? But they only took 14 minutes to get there on a trip that coach would have taken a couple of hours.
But surely they had, like, a sort of an hour of faff before getting on the plane, waiting at the gate or whatever and going through security.
I bet it's a fairly speedy exit at the other end at Norwich.
Yeah,
Luton Airport is a nightmare.
All right. Well,
even if you fast track the Arsenal players, it's still a nightmare.
Always first with the strong opinions, Fernando Duarte there.
Have you been there?
London airports. I have, yeah.
It freaks you out because there's like hologram of the woman talking to you, and you feel like you're in the Star Wars saying, help me, Obi-Wan, take your liquids and your laptop or something like that.
So, but anyway.
They could have taken a longboat trip, of course, the lovely canals and waterways around Norwich.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
then they would have an excuse to actually have lost
anyway,
this game.
Can I say, well done, Norwich. Yeah? First win of the season against the highly fancied Gunners. They've been shipping bundlers of goals. They conceded 5 to Liverpool, for goodness sake. We all thought, wow, this is going to be a mighty, mighty scoreline for Arsenal. But it certainly wasn't, was it, Barry?
No, that's a huge coupon buster. No one saw that coming, I think, at all. Grant Hall doing the business from and keeping a clean sheet will give them so much to build on.
I thought there was a great quote from Martin Wenger afterwards. He said, we kept the ball for 70 minutes and we just couldn't score. I couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that happened. I mean,
it's so rare for that to happen.
He watches them once or twice a week every week. I mean, how much of a surprise was this?
Why did they have such a bad game? They weren't creating anything. It was Cazorla had an off day. What was the story?
This is a newish team. We seem to expect teams to bed down and settle in instantly. I think they've got together. There's a very good early momentum, but you have setbacks. You know, teams will play well against you.
Well, that's fair.
Although, in defence of the centre forwards or whatever, the strikers, Santi Cazorla wasn't in his most inspired afternoon as well. And everything goes through him at Arsenal these days, isn't it?
Right. For Norwich, can this be the turning point?
A lot will depend on Grant Holt, I think. That was his third goal in three. So if he can hit a vein, well, he's in form, clearly, and if he can continue that, then, you know, this is a bonus 3 points that Norwich fans won't have been expecting.
Norwich have Aston Villa next. Who's their manager again?
Paul Lambert.
Paul Lambert, and didn't he used to be at Norwich?
Yes,
that's going to be a big game then. So they take on a Villa side that's in all sorts of trouble as well, having just lost to Fulham. That's going to be an interesting match. Arsenal, meanwhile, now find themselves closer to the bottom of the Premier League than they do to the top. Oxlade-Chamberlain, he's going to miss the midweek game with Schalke with a hip injury. Arsenal, not doing badly in the Champions League. Lukas Podolski scoring 4 goals in his last 3 Champions League matches. And Arsenal very good at home. Since 2003, they've not lost to a foreign team at the Emirates. Interesting that, eh? Mm. Or Highbury before. Yeah. Good one. There you go. Schalke, they threw away a victory at home to Montpellier in the last game. So they're second in the group. It's a big game, that, isn't it, Barry? Do sound excited.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I wasn't listening.
No, that's right. It's a big game, that, Arsenal-Schalke.
Yeah, it is.
Good. Now, also in Champions League action this week, Man City, who are going to be at Ajax. Ajax, who stumbled to a 3-3 draw with Heracles in the Eredivisie this weekend, Barney. They're currently lying fourth in Holland. Well, this is a huge game for Man City. We should, first of all, talk about what happened at the Hawthorns, of course. Because, I thought this might be a tricky game for them, and so it proved until the introduction of Edin Dzeko once again.
Yeah, he's making a name for himself now as an impact sub.
Mm. And, he's not very happy about that either.
£27 million to the super
all
sub.
Right, dude, just launch in with a mouthful of a muffin there.
Well, impact subs are never happy about being impact subs, are they? I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the only impact sub in the history of football who seemed content enough to his role.
Well, they do have a very delicate position now in the Champions League, having failed to win their first 2 group games, desperately needing a result. What you saw against West Brom, again failing to keep a clean sheet, Barney, did it worry you?
I thought that they were brilliant against West Brom.
Really?
They had a man sent off. They won a match with 10 men by showing absolute champion quality, scoring right at the end with a breakaway, brilliant breakaway goal, amazingly well-weighted pass from Aguero for the winner. That's real quality. I mean, that they don't look a team when they play in the Champions League. They still look raw. They still look a collection of individuals. Mistakes and get teased out of them by teams who possibly keep the ball a bit better. But in the Premier League, they look to have that quality, and it's something they haven't quite managed to translate. I'm really looking forward to the game against Ajax. I think it's a really good test for them. And also, I just love watching Ajax. I don't know if this is a particularly great Ajax team at the moment, but you've got to enjoy watching Ajax.
Just because the name or the jerseys?
The name,
or what?
The kit.
All right.
The ghosts of other players running around on the pitch.
Right. Okay, cool. Check local listings for details. That's it for part one. We'll be back in part two with more on the Champions League. Part two begins with our man in Spain, Sid Lowe. Sid!
Hello, James.
Hi, Sid. Which was the short robot in Star Wars?
R2-D2.
All right, you're clear to continue. What a terrific weekend.
Hang on.
Yeah, I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Why did you ask me that? Surely everyone knows that, don't they?
Surely everybody knows that.
I got him mixed up with C-3PO.
Right.
Oh, how could you?
Yeah.
I mean, only one of them's a relative of Dusty Bin. So.
Now, wow, what a weekend, eh, in Spain, Sid? And what a midweek that awaits us. Should we? I know we want to talk about Barcelona and their game against Celtic and the Deportivo match. But just quickly, first of all, Dortmund taking on Real. Dortmund, we just heard about the fact they lost against Schalke. Real, they won, didn't they?
Yes, they did. 2-0 against Celtic. It was probably, I would say, of all the games, it's the least remarkable.
Right, okay.
Apart from maybe Osasuna Betis, which was 0-0, one of those games where you want to clean your eyeballs with bleach afterwards.
Right, I know the kind. Listen, Real, they do have a bit of a rocky track record of late against the German sides. Any chance that Dortmund might stick a large spanner in their works in this game?
Well, it's possible, and not least because what I've seen of Dortmund, which I can't claim to be a huge amount, I've been really, really impressed with them. I think they look like a genuinely good side. Madrid, though, are in that very strong position now of having won their two games already. I think they are now in a position, Real Madrid, with one more win against Ajax, and it's pretty much done. Although in a group as strong as this, if Ajax lose to everyone, then of course the other three teams may get enough points to make the points total you need to get through the group really, really high. I think that happened to City last year, didn't it? City got knocked out, I think,
it did.
10 points.
It did.
But I mean, yeah, of course they have enough to make Real Madrid struggle, and I think Madrid would be reasonably happy if they come out of it with a draw, and then they'd be pretty well set for the rest of the group.
All right, well, Dortmund certainly looked brilliant in the game at the Etihad in the last round of Champions League matches. Well, let's move on then to Barcelona, who are facing Celtic off the back of a quite extraordinary match there against Deportivo La Coruña.
Yeah, I almost don't know where to start with this, so maybe I should throw some of the things that happened at you, and we'll try and unpick the game, because it was incredible. Put it this way, Lionel Messi scored an unbelievably brilliant hat-trick, and yet that seems to me to be almost the most kind of routine thing about the game, which tells you, obviously, how good Messi is that this kind of thing keeps on happening. Mm. But it was just a completely bonkers game. Barcelona conceded 4 but still won. Deportivo scored 4 against Barcelona, but still lost it. Finished 5-4. There was the opening 15 minutes or so from Barcelona. They were absolutely brilliant. They were 3-0 up after just over a quarter of an hour, and they were completely in control. We saw, I think, one of the best own goals I've ever seen. It was like a Bergkamp or a Tissier goal, but just in the wrong end. A lovely little dink over the goalkeeper on the volley as well. You saw possibly the best display of diving I've ever seen from Ricky. Ricky, with 3 dives, managed to get a free kick, which led to a goal, win a penalty, which led to a goal, and get a player sent off. 3 dives, 2 goals, 1 red card. It's a pretty good performance, that.
All right, astonishing. Is he a figure of controversy this Monday?
Well, I mean, he is in the Catalan press, but not really in the Madrid press. But what is interesting about him, and I think this is one of the problems that Spanish football has in general, is that the person criticised for this is the referee rather than the person who's conned the referee. Mm. I see it as less the referee's fault than the player himself, to be perfectly honest with you.
Right.
And it was just a tremendous performance. He actually played quite well, apart from the diving, Ricky. And Barcelona look a little bit ropey at the back. But then if you kind of analyse it and you look at each of the goals, you can say, well, in a way, all the goals are explainable. As I say, one's a penalty, one's a free kick, both of which probably shouldn't have been given. In fact, the penalty definitely shouldn't have been given. One's a massive cock-up by Victor Valdes, and the other's a brilliant own goal by Jordi Alba. And Cesc Fabregas was superb, which is something that hasn't happened that often. There's been question marks over him. He provided 3 assists, which were really, really good, all 3 as well. And as I say, Leo Messi is just frightening what Messi's doing.
Mm, still conceding 4 goals, not the best. And now they're heading into this midweek game without Sergio Busquets. And they're facing, of course, the new-look Celtic. The Celtic team that's fresh from going to Spartak Moscow and in the greatest night of Neil Lennon's career, coming away with a win.
Mm, and after a pre-match press conference, which was comedy gold as well, I don't know how aware you were of the press conference before the game, where Neil Lennon was asked all sorts of basically fairly silly questions by the media there. Things like, do you think it's time we put a statue of Aidan McGeady outside the stadium? And what would you do if you won the lottery and stuff like this? It was, and not the lottery, if you had as much money as our owner has, to which Lennon said, you'd never see me again, which I thought was quite a good answer.
Yeah.
I don't think that means that Barcelona are especially scared
Rangers,
of this.
Starting whip round, probably. But,
yeah. Anyway. They know they can get caught out, Barcelona, but I don't think they're especially scared. Although Busquets is a really big deal. I think one of the things that gets forgotten about Sergio Busquets amidst everything else that goes on around him, it's just what a good player he is. And I think Spain found that out in midweek when they failed to beat France. And he's really, really important. So it'll be Alex Song, almost certainly, in the middle of the Barcelona midfield, playing that role.
Mm. All right. Now, I remember 2009 when little Ruben Kazan, went to the Nou Camp and got a 2-1 win. What are the chances of Celtic springing a similar surprise?
Well, given the almost freak nature of that 2-1 win, I honestly couldn't tell you the statistics, and then I'm sure lots of people will say, oh, the statistics don't matter, but I think I remember that game being something like two shots that Ruben had had, and Barcelona had 25 or something crazy. And one of them was an absolute belter from about 400 yards out. So, I mean, it's not very likely, but yeah, of course it could happen. And of course, Barcelona may feel ever so slightly vulnerable. But it's, in truth, it's not a game that I think they're going into with a particularly deep sense of dread.
Indeed. Now, impressive as Messi's goal stats are, Sid, are Falcao's even better? In his last 10 games, he scored 12 goals for Atletico and 4 for Colombia. How good is he, and how good is his hair, Sid?
His hair,
yeah,
is absolutely impeccable. You expect to see him walk down the stairs in an airplane and kind of swish his head, and everybody swoons. It is like he just stepped out of a salon. It's sensational. Right. But anyway, let's go on to his football, shall we? He's a brilliant, brilliant player. This weekend, by the way, you know, I know you'd like to talk about the other teams as well.
Yeah.
I'm just looking through the list now. 5 games this weekend were decided in the last 5 minutes.
All right.
In Spain.
Well, the thing with him, I'm just going to interrupt, because did he not say before this game, somebody said, how could you be a better player, Falcao? And he said, well, I'd like to try my hand at free kicks. So he did this weekend.
Well, right, okay. Now, I'm going to steal my own thunder here, because this is what I'm writing about. But Radamel Falcao, right, it's called 182 goals in his career, but not one free kick in his entire career. And you're right, at the start of the season, it wasn't actually directly before this game, at the start of the season he was asked, amongst the various things, you know, what could you improve? He said, well, I think could do with being a bit better at free kicks. So in the last minute, it's 0-0, Real Sociedad against Atletico Madrid. Atletico win a free kick on the edge of the area. Falcao comes over and literally grabs at the ball and kind of bustles other players out of the way. I'm having it. And to be honest, your first reaction is, you arrogant so-and-so. And then your reaction, you're tempted to think, well, you know what? This is not really the time to be messing around trying to score free kicks, because your team could do with this to stay at the top of the table, level with Barcelona. Last minute, 0-0, he takes it and scores. And it turns out this isn't an act of arrogance at all. After the game, Diego Simeone said, no, it's Falcao's been working on this in training for weeks. In other words, he had finally reached a point where he thought, okay, I'm ready to take this. And for me, this was the definition of Falcao as a player. This is a guy who has been successful because he's supremely dedicated, a supreme hard worker, and it was a brilliant free kick and his first ever as a professional.
All right, keeps Atletico on top of the table with Barcelona on 22 points. Malaga there in third place. And, of course, they've got a big game coming up midweek, have they not, against the awesome-looking Milan?
I'm glad you said that, because, to be honest, this is the game by far and away involving Spanish teams that most excites me, the Champions League this week. And what Malaga have done is brilliant when you consider the problems that they appear to have and did indeed have in the summer, and they've overcome that really well. They're playing really quite nice football at times. They were a little fortunate, perhaps, at the weekend with the late goal, but Joaquin played really, really well again. And yeah, the game against Milan is fantastic. They've also, Malaga, got this great thing now that I think happens quite often, not always, but happens quite often with teams that go into Champions League for the first time. And that just kind of sense of wonderment, you know, that sense of all the fans, you know, wow, this is amazing, we're playing the Champions League. And yeah, it's maybe a little bit naff, but standing there and hearing the Champions League hymn before theme tune, or whatever you want to call it, anthem, I suppose, before the games. And there's a real buzz about Malaga now. And add to that the fact they're playing really, really well. They were good in the two qualifying games. They've been good in the two group games so far. And I actually think they're favourites against Milan.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've scored bundles. I don't think they've conceded yet in the Champions League. Well,
no, they haven't, in four games.
Yeah, Milan are a real shower. And we'll come on to that in a second, Barry. Don't you worry about that. Sid, that's terrific stuff. Look forward to speaking to you on Thursday, if we may, to get your view and the Spanish reaction to how it all turned out.
Of course you may.
Lovely.
So.
Thanks, Sid. Yes, Barry, Milan. Now, they had that big win in the last round of Champions League fixtures away to Zenit St. Petersburg, which was largely due to the exceptional goalkeeping of Christian Abbiati. And since then, they've been rotten. They lost in the derby, and this weekend they lost again to Lazio. Yep. 3-2. They went 3-0 down. They did kind of come back into it, but largely because Lazio fell asleep at the wheel. And they still didn't get the win. They've now been put into detention, into kind of punitive training camp until the Malaga game. And all decisions on the manager are pretty much awaiting the result of that. But Max Allegri looks more and more precarious on the Milan bench, with a lot of the fans now openly contesting him. It does look like this is only going to end one way.
To what do you attribute their decline?
Well, I would say that perhaps the departure of Thiago Silva, of Ibrahimovic, plus
about six of the historic old guard, the people who actually had ties to the days when they actually won something, and to some degree still represented the kind of Milan standards in the dressing room.
And the selling of Andrea Pirlo to Juventus, come on. I mean,
right. That's also a very big factor. You're absolutely right.
The loss of David Beckham.
That's another one, yeah. All sorts of things. They're going down like Silvio Berlusconi to the bunker. No. It is true to say that they are now only their head-to-head record above the relegation zone. They've got the same points as the team in third last.
And the money's also dried up, didn't it? The Fininvest has been kind of like tightened the purse strings and stuff like that.
Yeah, but that's why all the players have departed, although they still make a big noise about how much money Berlusconi's having to fork out to keep the club going. And there's a lot of talk now that there may well be a part of Milan that's bought up by Arab investors.
Almost as though now that Berlusconi isn't in charge of the country, some sort of streams of revenue have dried up from somewhere.
Well, yeah, it's also true.
I'm sure it's not going
to. Absolutely not. But anyway, at the top, it's all ever so close. Juve beat Napoli, your team, Fernando, on Saturday, looking really, really good with a debut goal from Paul Pogba. A lot of people wondering just how good he really was in Italy. Good enough to get the front cover of Sunday's Gazzetta dello Sport. Extraordinary Pogba, they call him. They reckon he's the new Vieira. And it was a good goal he scored as well. In a 2-0 victory for Juve over Napoli. So they're 3 points clear of Napoli. Then you've got Lazio right behind Napoli and Inter level with Lazio. So it's nice and tight at the top after their own win at home to Catania. Less than convincing win, I would say. Juve are taking on Nordjylland or similar, you know, the yep. Danish side, right? And, well, they're looking for a win there. Of course, they've had draws in their first two matches. Yeah. Should mention Leonardo Bonucci. Why, Barney? Why?
Why?
All right, take it away, Barry.
Well, he was out with his wife and young child buying a new car in a Ferrari dealership. And when he left, I think while he was walking out of the shop, he was accosted by an armed robber who had a gun, which he pointed at Bonucci's head and demanded his watch. So Bonucci, as you do, refused to give him the watch, punched him in the face. And the somewhat bewildered and bemused robber went, "What the hell are you doing? I could kill you." And Bonucci sort of went, "Well, yeah, fill your boots." And they had a foot race down the street, at which point the guy got away. His accomplice was waiting for him on a moped.
On a moped, yeah. Bonucci tried to stop the moped.
Bonucci was tracing the man with the gun, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Well, it says a lot about the courage of this thief, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a very fine line between courage and stupidity, but yeah, Bonucci, hats off to him.
Well, a man's got to know his limitations, but clearly this is well within Bonucci's
dream. No, he was stupid. You got a gun pointed at you in front of your wife and kid. You don't punch the thief in the face. If he was like a better thief and pulled the bloody trigger, he would be like a, you know, his brains would be on his wife's lap, just like Jackie O, you know? So you get a gun pointed at you, you just don't punch the guy, because the guy can shoot you. It's simple.
Absolutely. Wise words there. Equally, if you're travelling in a motorcade through Dallas, best keep the hood up.
Exactly.
I was going to say, Bonucci also, he was the man who, I don't know if you remember when Balotelli went off on one after scoring against Ireland, it was Bonucci who came up, so he is a brave chap, and basically gagged Balotelli, shut him up. Anyway, here you go. Terrific stuff, Juve. They're quite a side, aren't they? Now, not the most newsworthy slap of this week, because I'm shifting gear here and I'm moving on to Chris Kirkland. And extraordinary events there, the match there between Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds this weekend, when a Leeds fan ran on and smacked Chris Kirkland in the face, then ran off and managed to get away with it until he posted on Facebook, "I think I got away with hitting the Sheffield Wednesday keeper." Extraordinary, no?
Yeah, he was arrested yesterday. He's a 21-year-old from Gloucester, Leeds fan. He was already serving a ban, so he shouldn't have been at the game because he was supposed to be banned from every ground in the country.
And using the railways.
He's been banned from Elland Road since he was 16, I think. And he's also banned from using Network Rail lines that are going to any destination where Leeds are playing. So
I mean, we laugh about this, but it was a horrible, horrible match.
How do you enforce that? Because I'm guessing that there's a real problem about enforcing these bans. The guy's too... Okay, you were banned from breathing. Well, you were banned from walking with your right foot. Who's going to be? You're going to divert funds to have a policeman watching him all the time?
You make him report to the police station while the match is taking place.
And I think the point is, if he then goes, he does get in a lot of trouble. But also, I think we should keep in perspective. I mean, obviously, it's really terrible and bad, but it is one man. And
But what were the other leads? This is the thing. Neil Warnock's... line afterwards, and there was a lot of controversy about the fact that he sent the Leeds players over to salute the away fans, but Dave Jones, who'd been targeted by some pretty vile chants from those Leeds fans, who were a lot of missiles thrown, says Chris Kirkland. I think it's pretty unusual, even if you thought it was just one of them. It's a pretty unusual day to send your players over to salute those supporters.
Just one guy, but if nobody tried to stop the guy, or if they were behaving like animals, I think they should be banned from away matches. I mean, no disrespect to Leeds United Football Club, but if their supporters are going to behave like animals, like wild beasts...
Well, ban them for what? Ban them because there were some vile chants and people...
No, because one of them went and punched the goalkeeper in the face.
Well, that was one guy. You can't ban... 10,000 other people from going to football
but
matches.
But if the English FA is calling for a ban for Serbia for monkey chants against one of the England under-21 team, should there not be a similar policy if there are offensive chants, not racist, but offensive chants against a manager?
I'm more offended by monkey chants than a goalkeeper being slapped. That's one guy, and the racism was quite a few people.
Well, that guy will presumably be charged.
He will be banned.
And I'm presumably get jail,
right?
You'd imagine.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the fact that the Leeds fans... are alleged to have made abusive chants about Dave Jones and also about Jimmy Savile, pro-Jimmy Savile chants.
Standing up for pro-Jimmy Savile chants.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Hands off Jimmy.
Yeah.
He's one of us.
I just find it strange that we can say, okay, racist, that dessert, you can't chant racist things at a match, otherwise you get banned. But if fans are chanting things about somebody being a paedophile, that's fine.
But that happens constantly. Every single game.
So did racism
used to happen. You'd have to ban everybody. Well, we've done something about that.
But we shouldn't do anything about other stuff because it's not racism.
I don't like it either. I don't think it's great. But I wouldn't single out Leeds as being the only people who chant offensive things.
They're alleged to have done it this time, and I can understand how Dave Jones would go, well, I think something should be done about that. Or certainly we shouldn't go over and applaud those fans at the end of the game.
But look, football has an idiocy problem and an anger problem. It's full of angry idiots. You know, there is a basic problem with the fact that everybody does this stuff.
Right.
I'm not sure singling out Leeds is going to help anyone.
No, okay. No, it's not. Nobody wants to single out Leeds. It's just that they happen to be in the news for it this week.
Yeah, well, if we take a strong line with them, we should take a strong line with everyone, and hopefully we can empty these grounds of these people forever.
But how many clubs have you seen recently in which one of your fans went and punched a goalkeeper in the face? That's, you know, the security of the football players is something that should cannot be messed up with.
I'm sorry, in law, you punish the person who committed a crime. You don't punish the other people who happen to be standing near him.
Anyway, that was Chris Kirkland, but I love the fact that he posted it on Facebook. Marvellous. Marvelous stuff.
It's almost like that guy who tried to create a riot. During the riots last year, the guy, okay, guys, let's all go and plunder something on Facebook. Yeah.
Intriguingly, that man was also from Gloucester.
I see.
Right. Ban people from Gloucester and stop trains going there.
Yeah, just ban Gloucester.
Ban Gloucester. All right, now, hey, last week, Fernando, everyone, and I mean everyone, was raving about that fella Neymar. Little-known striker out of a club called Santos, who did the business for Brazil, did he not? And then, one day later, turned up in the big game against Ronaldinho's mob, Atletico Mineiro.
Yeah.
He did a rainbow flick, first of all.
He arrived and he basically... It seems that he wasn't in a 14-hour plane journey. I mean, it's fantastic. But I'm just worried that Neymar is going to basically burn out. He needs to get away from Brazil as soon as he can.
Really?
Yeah, because he's idiotic. You can't play for a national team on Tuesday and all of a sudden parachute into a game. I mean,
it'd be cool if he had parachuted, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Well, the game was going on. Sean straps the chute and then just... Because, you know, he would. You know, he probably could do that. He did this amazing flick. And then the goal. Oh, how good was that?
I think he can do better than that, to be honest.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. Do you know, the only disappointment about him is that on the occasion, the only one I can think of, to be fair, is when he was in the World Clubs Cup against Barcelona. When people build up, how is he going to do against, you know, a tough European side? He completely disappeared from that game.
Yeah, but the team disappeared from that game.
Yeah.
The whole game was bossed by Barcelona. They bitch-slapped Santos around.
Right.
And by extent, the Brazilian football, you know, Brazilian football ran away. Everybody's now with a massive hubris. because we played against a top European side and they toyed with us. And Santos was supposed, at the time, supposed to be the best team in South America. Do I think Neymar can go places? I think he can, but perhaps he's doing those things like he did against Atletico Mineiro because he's getting too big for the Brazilian league.
All right, where do you think he's going to go? Is it Chelsea?
There's a lot of talk about a pre-contract with Barcelona. I mean, it was either Barcelona or Real, but I really don't think his advisors will send him to Real. It's Cristiano's gig there. And just look what happened to Kaká. And I think that Kaká would be a big example for him. They're playing together in the national team. And it was fantastic to see the whole adulation around. In the beginning, when Kaká showed up, first time in 2.5 years, everybody, the press was all over Kaká, and Neymar was a bit forgotten. And all of a sudden, you saw Kaká bringing him back into the fold, saying, this kid is wonderful, he's amazing. And then, like, a couple of minutes later, they were already on Instagram taking pictures together. And on the pitch, they gelled pretty well. And
it's interesting what's happening with Brazil as well, because there was this feeling, you're not doing any qualifiers at the moment, you're already, naturally, as host, going to be there at the World Cup. But there was a feeling that this was one of the worst Brazil outfits in a very, very long time under Menezes. The new direction, that's brought a lot more optimism, is that right?
Yeah, a lot more of optimism. The new direction being Brazil playing in a force, something looking like a 4-6-0,
right?
Because of the absence of proper number nines. I think Damião is the only one that's been properly called up, and they tried to use Fabiano in a home friendly against Argentina, friendly where only national base players could be called, and it didn't work as well as expected. Problem is, the FA has blatantly ring-fenced Brazil. They're not going to play any top sides until the Confederations Cup unless the Spain game gets going. There is a feeling amongst the players, and I heard Kaká saying, listen, the only way we can see how good we are is if we pair ourselves against the top ones. And I'm tired of this talk about Spain versus Brazil. Okay, let's play them, and then people can talk whatever they want.
Did he mention England as well? Because they're playing England
in February. Yeah, but people are not very enthusiastic in Brazil about this England side.
Really?
Yeah, they're not very enthusiastic. I mean, as surprising as it could be, but it is a tough opponent. And obviously, I think England are ahead of Brazil in the FIFA rankings. So
certainly are.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, in November, it's against Colombia in New Jersey, and then Radamés Falcão will be paired against our centre back partnership made of Thiago Silva and David Luiz.
So. What's your impression then? Are Brazil any good?
They are getting somewhere good. Today, if we could say, okay, which are the best sides in the world, I think we would be behind Spain, behind Germany, perhaps even behind Argentina. Mm. But then again, these things only matter at a competition. If you peak at a competition, it's fine. Do I think Brazil are going to win the World Cup? I think there's a great risk they won't. But, the team at least is getting more competitive. I would love to see them playing against real sides, playing Iraq. Seriously, Japan is already a much better team. Hmm. So it was good to see.
They beat France. Cool.
Yeah, they beat France. And they gave Brazil a scare in the first few minutes. Nagatomo running out of defense. Honda had a lovely game as well. They could have scored in the first 15 minutes. But I would love to see Brazil pairing against Germany, because we looked like fools when we played Germany last year. Hmm. Bastian Schweinsteiger basically ran rings around everybody. So if you want to have a better idea, that you got to put yourself against the best.
Absolutely. All right, fantastic stuff. Now, let's just get some posts and stuff before we head back to the Premier League for part three. P. Daddy says, time for an update on York City. Why? Because Matty Blair was injured in a collision with a training dummy this week. Surely some kind of first. Other Blair family injuries, and don't laugh at this, include Matty's dad injuring himself falling down the stairs celebrating one of his son's goals. It's not quite as good as Kirk Broadfoot being injured by an exploding egg, but it's not bad. Any more ridiculous injuries, says P. Daddy.
That's right, Broadfoot, he tried to boil an egg in the microwave.
Well, do you want my poached egg story?
Oh, yeah.
I've had that. I'll tell you what, they are dangerous things.
How are you attempting to poach it?
If you poach it, if you stick it in one of those little baked egg dishes with a little bit of oil, etc., it's meant to work out. I've seen it done. But the problem is, when you then put your fork into it, there's a build-up of kind of toxic gases inside. It will quite literally explode. You have to really approach it with caution.
Exactly what happened to Broadfoot.
Exactly, yeah.
Anybody from the Blair family playing with, like, Diet Coke and Mentos as well? Because, you know...
Yeah, don't for goodness sake,
do celebrating his goal on the stairs?
I don't know. Maybe he was just walking around the house and news came through.
Or maybe the stairs in the ground? Maybe he was going for a... Anyway,
I don't know.
We need to know more.
Yeah. Man United Bruin responds, hey, how about Canizares and that bottle of cologne, or was it aftershave? Now, I've forgotten this story. What was that?
He dropped it on his foot, didn't he?
Oh, but that's salad cream all over again, isn't it?
No, but he took him out of the World Cup in 98.
Oh, that's quite bad. Yeah.
Yeah, he had a deep cut in his right foot, and he was dropped on the Spain squad.
Right. I remember.
It's a really appropriate injury, because he looks like a man who would wear a lot of cologne. You can imagine this. Yeah. This is just going to happen one day.
Would have been a big bottle. Yeah.
And they are generally quite heavy anyway, with lots of chunky
Anything
corners.
Anything dropped on your foot as well really hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us a story about you breaking your toe in Malta.
Yeah, we
haven't heard that in ages.
Well, I tell you what, I've broken another toe now. I walked into a chair leg that I wasn't expecting to be there.
Dying.
You know, it was just like a stub, but at the same time, I've got one toe that's now sticking up like a kind of like Tintin's quiff. Yeah, because I didn't set it properly, because I didn't go to the hospital. I walked it off. Yeah. Almost literally.
I was run over by my own car.
Were you?
Yeah.
Were you a member of an East London sort of pseudo-rap group?
No. I had this old Fiat Palio, and it wasn't turning, you know, the battery wasn't doing all right, so I parked it on a hill and jump-started in second gear, etc. And that day, for some reason, stupid, I was hungover and going to work. The car was against the curb. So I went outside to help it.
Yeah.
And it escaped from my control and started going towards another house.
Yeah.
So I immediately stood in front of it and tried to hold it.
Right.
And I was wrecked by my own car. Yeah. I almost missed the Olympic Games because I had, I had the stitches in my hand. It basically crushed my hand against another car.
Gee, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really funny. It's a great, you know, party trick to tell this story.
Yeah.
Yeah, follow that with your Metatarsus story, Jimbo.
Yeah. Right, okay, cool. That round to Fernando.
Explaining that in the hostel was the best thing in the A&E.
What was that? Explaining that in the hospital.
How did it happen? So, whose car was that? Mine? And where were you? Well, trying to hold it from... And obviously, the car also invaded somebody's garage and wrecked a fence and... It squeezed me between my car and the other guy's car, so I had to pay for everything. It was brilliant.
Wow,
my insurance guy was so happy.
Can I say, car manufacturers out there, I really think, you know, there's a little noise that goes off if you try and get out of your car without switching the lights off. I'm always doing this with a handbrake, and luckily I've never had anything quite that bad, but it's only a matter of time. Please put some kind of warning device on handbrakes when they've not been activated by a careless driver. Right, part three coming up soon with more from the Premier League and other things too. Part three, everybody. Barney's just said, there's nothing left. We've talked about everything. Barney, you're so wrong. Mm. I give you Man United Braga.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go. Man United, they got their win against Stoke in the end, didn't they? Although it did look a little bit in doubt. And that's been perhaps the story of their season, has it not?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I was interested by the goal that Michael Keightley scored, which basically involved just running straight down the middle of the pitch past everybody, pushing them out of the way while they all fell over. And this seems to be the problem with United for me at the moment. They lack a certain amount of physical strength and athleticism in the middle. You know, they're very good players. I mean, Paul Scholes obviously wonderful to watch, but I think they could do with a bit more dynamism in that. I mean, it's never a problem that can't be solved at Man United by having Roy Keane back. But, you know, I thought that was very soft. And they do play some lovely stuff going forward. But
Less at the back without Vidic. And in Europe, it's been a similar story. They were fortunate to beat Galatasaray 1-0 at home. And then against Cluj, if you recall, went behind that game. I tell you one other thing. They also drew at home with two sides, beginning with B last season. That was Benfica and Basel, and they're playing Braga this time. So, tell you what, Barry, get down the with your coupon. Yeah, there you go.
I loved that Keightley goal. That was my favourite goal of the whole weekend.
It's the sort of goal you dream of scoring. You just run through everyone, and no one can stop you because you're so incredibly
powerful.
Barely
got the shot away. It was like slow motion, and it nearly didn't cross the line as well. It just sort of hit one post and then roll slowly across to the other.
If you tried to do that with Stam in the team, you'd bounce off.
Or he'd have been kicked up in the air.
Or even Vidic, actually. I think wasn't playing.
All right. Braga, the third best team in Portugal, and they had a cup match on Friday to give them extra time to prepare for this game, in which they're going to be facing Robin van Persie, who scored five in his last five Champions League appearances. Will RVP get job done?
He probably will. I mean, yeah. I still can't really adapt to him being in the Man United. I still find it weird.
Yeah.
He's kind of, he's too, he should be playing for someone else. Suddenly he's playing for Man United. It seems, he's like and he seems so happy about it. He's always waving at the crowd. There's no penitence. It's like he's a overly friendly stepdad
who's suddenly, perhaps, because he's gone grey. His hair's gone quite grey now.
It's very heavily gelled. Is that grey?
Oh, do you think it's just reflective?
I think, yeah, there's an incredible amount of thick, matted gel. I didn't realise it was actually grey.
I'm not sure. That was producer Ben told me that. Okay, now, in other things that we haven't talked about in news, Barney, you've only got the Weir Tyne derby. Crikey, Barry, did Sunderland get away with this one, or what?
Oh, they did, didn't they?
Hmm. What's going on with Martin O'Neill's Sunderland? You know, they've got the manager now, O'Neill. They've got backing. This weekend they had a team with just 10 men and a big crowd roaring them on. What's the problem?
They don't seem to have purpose. I mean, they were very ponderous moving the ball around against Newcastle. Martin O'Neill's side, you kind of know what's going to happen. They're going to attack you down the flanks, but yet the full-backs, Danny Rose and Gardner, don't seem to do overlapping. I don't know if they're not fit enough to do it, or they just chose not to, or they were instructed not to. But if you're, you know, and especially if you're playing against 10 men, you know, get them down the wings and stretch them and make use of the available space and the extra man. But they just didn't do that, and they were very lucky to draw. Newcastle were vastly superior in most departments, I think. Danny Rose, I kind of felt sorry for him. He obviously had a tough week with everything that went on in Serbia. Martin O'Neill decided he was in the right state of mind to play anyway, and then he was responsible for the goal after 2 minutes. It was an error on his part. But he recovered quite well from that and played well. But, yeah, Sunderland just don't seem to have a plan.
Hmm. All right. Well, worrying. Newcastle, they scored both the goals effectively in that game. And so Sunderland still only have Stephen Fletcher scoring goals for them. Newcastle are taking on Club Bruges. They've got a terrific record in Europe. Did you know that Newcastle are unbeaten in 23 UEFA Cup and Europa League home games?
Astonishing.
It is astonishing. Bruges lost their last away game 4-0 at Bordeaux. Elsewhere in the Premier League, West Ham, Southampton. Font pulled Andy Carroll's hair. He did, didn't he? Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
All right.
I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, apparently if you do that, his nose lights up. It's an amazing quality. But a penalty was awarded.
It certainly was.
Yeah, shades of Peter Crouch.
Very much against Trinidad and Tobago. Mm. Yeah. I tell you what a change from the Championship, though. West Ham couldn't get anything from Saints when they were both down in the little leagues. And now they're up top. West Ham bossing them.
Well, people forget Southampton have had two successive promotions. What they've achieved is actually amazing. They're always going to find it pretty hard in the Premier League. Whereas West Ham, you know, had this very well-paid squad, which was still full of the dregs of the people who'd taken them down.
Right.
If Southampton stay up, that will be a miracle.
Did you know that they've conceded more goals at this point in the season than anyone ever in the history of the Premier League of all time?
Doubly a miracle, then.
Yeah. All right, then. In other news, bottom of the table, QPR snatch point against Everton. 10-man Everton. Thanks to Fernando Julio Cesar.
Yeah, it was really a shame because it was a bold move on his behalf. Nobody can criticize Cesar for not having the guts or for not having cojones because, well, he could be doing an Aurelio Gomez and just stayed at Inter Milan getting his paycheck. And, well, he decided, no, I want to play. I want to try to get back into the national team, if you will. It's another story. But, you know, and then he moves to, you know, to
QPR.
Punchback. Sorry to the QPR fans, but you're always going to be fighting against relegation more than for trophies. And but it was a brave move for her. I thought he was amazing against Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he seemed to be in control of that game, but unfortunately, you know, he failed. And that's the thing with Cesar. It seems that with him, because he was amazing for so long, that every fail, every kind of bad movement for him now is going to have a bigger weight on him and on his critics. Because unfortunately, I mean, he failed at the wrong moments in the World Cup. It was his first problem. I mean, proper blunder, and then probably cost Brazil a place in the semi-final. But he's a great goalkeeper, and I think it was a good move by QPR. You know?
All right. Well, how costly will his error prove for Mark Hughes? Because, of course, it cost Rangers their first victory of the season. There was so much talk before this game of rumours at the training ground about Harry Redknapp coming in for Mark Hughes. A point against Everton, in form Everton, top four Everton.
Well, a point's okay, but that is a game they'll think that they should be winning. I mean, I don't know, there's loads of pressure on them, isn't there? They're bottom of the league. They've spent lots of money.
Right.
It's hard to imagine, you know, him being around much longer if they don't start winning.
They've got 3 points after 8 games. Imagine if they only had 2 after 8 games. Hey. There you go. Liverpool, Reading. Let's finish off on that. And Raheem Sterling. People making comparisons here with a certain Wayne Rooney. Remember the name and all that. His goal against Reading?
Well, it was amazing. It was scored on the day he completed 10 years, I think, of Rooney's amazing strike against David Seaman. And he's, I mean, people in Liverpool speak volumes about his guy. I went to a podcast, the Great Anfield Rap there.
Right.
And people were saying that this guy was the second coming of Jesus, although I do think by the name that he's Muslim. But hey-ho, I mean, he seems to have a great future if he's not kind of like screwed up by the club. But you know, it's great to see a guy coming up and from the ranks. It's great for the people, you know, for the Liverpool supporters. They seem to be quite in awe of that guy. If he's going to go places, we don't know. But people have the same thing about Rooney.
Yeah.
I mean, he just looks like a good player. He looks like a really good footballer. The problem is people start talking about how good is he going to be? He's going to be the best player. I mean, we sort of did this to Rooney, who's just basically a fairly good player who continually disappoints by not being the best player in the world. But he does look really good. I think he's great. Mm. And he looks like an intelligent player as well.
Right, and great news for Brendan Rodgers at a time when he's sorely lacking talent up front.
Well, Brendan Rodgers also decided to put him in the first team when people didn't expect that. It's a very brave move. Maybe he didn't have much choice, but he obviously saw something in him, and well done to him.
Well done indeed. Liverpool this Thursday, are going to be in Europa League action against Anzi McClack-Lack-Clacker, which will afford the good fans of Merseyside the chance to view in person Samuel Eto'o, Christophe Samba, Lassana Diarra, and Yuri Zhirkov, as well as manager Gus Hiddink, who had a good record against Liverpool, I'm thinking, didn't he?
Don't know.
Yeah, I think he did. Let's say he did.
I wouldn't be deceived by it being an away fixture, by the way, because all those players fly from Moscow for every game, which is probably actually closer to fly to Liverpool.
4 hours, yeah.
But they won't be bothered by the travel.
It's not like flying to Norwich.
Yeah, I see goals in this one, Barney. I see goals. Now, that's it for today's Football Weekly, although Football Weekly Extra sister podcast will be returning on Thursday to you know, discuss and dissect all the events of the midweek European action and probably have a little look forward to the weekend as well. Do join us for that. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben, to Fernando Duarte, Barney Rone, and Barry Glendenning.
Must say, I missed you guys.
Yeah, I missed you too, Fernando.
A kind of like man missing, you know, yeah, bro thing, you know, that's cool.
Right, well, however it was you missed us, very, very warmly appreciated.
Thanks.
Lovely stuff. Speak to you soon, listeners. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Simon Hattonstone. I'm a Guardian journalist, and I occasionally write books that are not read by many people. Let me tell you about some of the great advice from those who really know how to do it. Top name authors that you can read in a new Guardian book called Write. It's brilliant. Funny, perverse, bonkers and wise. If it sounds like writing, then I rewrite, says Elmore Leonard. There's Anne Enright for despairing writers. Remember, the first 12 years are the worst. So, don't put off that dream of winning the Booker Prize any longer. Get inspired by our new Guardian book, Write. You can get yours for half price, £6.50, using promo code PODCAST. To order, visit guardian.co.uk/bookshop. Anytime up to the end of October.